Well, today I will talk about another application of the methods I talked about in the last two lectures. So I will discuss some applications of Cyber-Guit and Fleur equivariant K-theory. This is a generalization of Furuta's 10-8 theorem to manifolds with boundary. So let me start by reviewing what happens for closed four manifolds. So let's start with X4, a closed oriented four manifold. And let's say that pi1 of X is 1 for simplicity. Then, there is an intersection form let's call it Q on H upper 2 of X or H lower 2 of X if you prefer with Z coefficients, and if you write it as a matrix then the determinant of Q is plus or minus 1, so it's a unimodular form. So now you can ask to what extent these forms can appear. So it's true that any such Q can appear on H2 of X for topological four manifolds. So this is a result of Friedman. And in fact, they are pretty much determined by these forms, and the curve is Ibermann invariant. So things get more complicated if X is smooth, if we require X to be smooth, we get constraints on Q. The first such constraint is the Rochling's theorem, which says that if Q is even, this means that QXX is congruent to 0 mod 2 for all X, then 16 divides the signature of X. The signature of X means just the signature of Q. So it's actually an algebraic result that if you have an even unimodular form, then the signature is divisible by 8. But so Rochling, using the fact that X has a smooth structure, showed that in this case it's divisible by 16. The next result,
which is a result in Pinto equivariant index theory, isn't it?
Yes, you can think of it like that. It's, yeah, so it's... the next result in along these lines is Donaldson's diagonalizability theorem, which says that if Q is definite, positive or negative definite, then Q is diagonal. It's plus or minus the identity matrix. And, well, what if Q is indefinite? There are two cases. It can be odd or even. So odd just means that it's not even. And if it's odd, then the classification of unimodular quadratic form says that Q is of the form A copies of 1 plus B copies of minus 1. And then this is actually realized, of course, by A copies of CP2 plus B copies of CP2 bar. So this appear. The interesting question is what happens when it's even. Again, by the classification of quadratic form, now I'm going to call this also Q. Let me call this capital Q. It's going to be a copy, a bunch of copies of E8, and well, plus or minus the form E8, plus some copies of the hyperbolic form 0110. And this is also realized, well, one thing we know is that P is even by Rochlin's theorem. This is realized by, well, in some cases, it's realized by P over 2 copies of the K3 surface plus, well, depending on whether P is positive or negative, yes, you can take it at the K3 or minus K3, and then you add a connected sum with Q minus 3P over 2, S2 times S2. So S2 times S2 has intersection form this, and 0110, and K3 has intersection form 2E8 plus 30110. So this is okay for Q greater or equal than 3 absolute value of P over 2. So the K3 surface is, well, that's as best as you can get, as people know how to get. It's 3/2 of that, and then you can add S2 times S2, and you get all these forms. So the only remaining question is what happens if you can get the other forms, and the 11/8 conjecture which is due to Matsumoto, which was formulated by Matsumoto, says that you can't. So in this case, you should have Q greater or equal than 3P over 2. And it's called the 11/8 because this is equivalent to saying that B2 of X is greater or equal than 11/8 times the signature of X. So B2 is some linear combination like 8P plus 2Q, and the signature is just 8P. Right. And translating this by these linear combinations, you get this. So that's where 11/8 comes from. So if this were true, then it would complete the classification of what intersection forms can appear for smooth manifolds, and by Friedman's theorem, it would imply that we can classify smooth manifolds up to homeomorphism. Because if they're smooth, the Kirby-Zibbon-Mann is zero, and everything... assuming, let's say, simply connected. So this would complete the classification of simply connected smooth four manifolds up to homeomorphism. Of course, it's more interesting to do it up to diffeomorphism, but that's too hard. But this would just do homeomorphism. So the main result, the main progress in this direction is the 10/8 theorem of Kuruta from 95, I think, which says that Q is greater or equal than absolute value of P plus 1. So instead of 3, P over 2, so this means B2 is greater or equal than 10/8 times the signature plus 2. And, well, of course, this is not quite true for S4, where P and Q are 0, but Furuta says it's true. So it's true as long as they're not 0. So let's say if P is non-zero, then Q is greater or equal than P plus 1. But, okay, the one factor is not that important, the one term, but instead of 3/2, you get a coefficient of 1 in front of P. So it's somewhat weaker, but that's what we can do with Cyber-Gwyddon theory. Okay, so this is the result that I'm trying to mimic. So this is for closed four manifolds. And the proof, I'm going to sketch the proof in this talk, it's based on Pintu equivariant K theory. Now that we have these this invariance for three manifolds and for manifolds with boundary, it's natural to try to do the same thing for manifolds with boundary. So that's what I want to talk about. So what if X has boundary? You can get various results. For simplicity, let me focus on the case when let's say that h1 of y equals 0, as before. You can also get results when Y is a rational homology sphere, but in this case it's easier because we have the same classification. So if the boundary is a homology sphere, then the determinant of Q is still plus of minus 1 of the intersection form on H2 of X with integer coefficients. Basically, just homologically, there's no difference between this and having boundary S3 and then filling it with a ball. So then we have the same classification of unimodular intersection forms, and you can ask similar questions. So instead of Rohlin's theorem, we have that, if Q is even, maybe I should say, right, so... So I'm going to focus on the case of even forms, and it's better to just let me just say in this case. So going back here, let me make a remark. So if yes, how does this work? Right, if X is spin, if we have a spin structure, then Q of X is even. And if Q of X is even and pi 1 of X is 1, then X is spin. So basically, for simply connected four manifolds, you know, saying that these things are even, it was the same thing as saying that X has a spin structure. And in fact, the 11-8 conjecture can be formulated, and the 10-8 theorem can be proved also when the manifold is not simply connected. But then you don't just want Q of X to be even; you want the manifold to be spin. So this theorem is X spin and closed, then we get this inequality. And I mean, you will see where the spin structure comes in the proof. So here, let's focus on the same case when X is spin. So Q of X is even, and now Rohlin's theorem says something else. It's the signature of X is still, well, we know that it's divisible by 8 from algebra, but what we now have is that this gives us the Rohlin invariant of Y mod 2. So it's divisible by 16 if Y has Rohlin invariant 0, and it's not if it's 8 mod 16 if it has Rohlin invariant 1. Okay, so now let me state the theorem. So I wrote a paper on this, and then Furuta and Lee told me that they were working on, they got similar results independently. The theorem says that to every homology 3 sphere, Y, we can associate an invariant kappa of Y, which is an integer, such that, several things. So kappa is congruent to mu mod 2, or maybe I should say kappa mod 2 is the Rohlin invariant. Kappa descends to theta 3H. So it's similar to alpha, beta, gamma. It gives you a map from theta 3H to Z that lifts mu. But what is new is that it also tells you something about intersection forms, namely, if X is spin and the boundary of X is Y, then the intersection form has to be something of the form, let's say it's p times e minus e8 plus q copies of 0, 1, 1, 0. It has to be something like that where, p could be negative, and then you get positive copies of e8, if you prefer. And assuming that you have, let's say, at least one factor like this, so q greater than 0, then we get the inequality q is greater or equal than p plus 1 minus kappa of y. So here, Furuta got q greater or equal than p plus 1. And what happens for manifolds with boundaries is that you get this correction term kappa of y.
Does kappa have good behavior for reversely orientation?
Not really. No. Yes, they seem sort of unrelated as far as I can see. So if you want... if you want to get better bounds for positive things like p times e8 plus q times 0, 1, 1, 0, it's better to switch the orientation and use kappa of minus y, and that can be quite different. The reason is because kappa is quite similar to alpha, and alpha of minus y is minus gamma of y. So basically you have two invariants if you want kappa of y and minus kappa of minus y, instead of alpha and gamma. So let me give some examples. Kappa of S3 is 0, so that's why this generalizes Furuta's theorem. If you want kappa of the Poincaré sphere is 1, it better be odd, since it's congruent to Röchlin Mach 2. An interesting example is sigma 2, 3, 12, n plus 1. This is 0. So what we get is that we get that q is greater or equal than p plus 1 for things with boundary y equals sigma 2, 3, 12, n plus 1. This is already, in a sense, this is already known for n equals 1 and 2. And the reason for this is that sigma 2, 3, 13 and sigma 2, 3, 25 bound homology balls. So these are the typical examples that are of manifolds that are trivial in homology cobordism. They are homology cobordant to S3. So now, if you have a manifold with boundary something like this, let's say sigma 2, 3, 13, then you can add the homology ball and apply Furuta. Apply Furuta to this. And you get this inequality, because there's no difference between this and the regular ball. However, so this is, if you want, so this is, this appears to be new for n greater than 2. So for n greater than 2, it's actually unknown if sigma 2, 3, 12 n plus 1 bounds a homology ball for n greater than 2. Yes?
Is there any example where the Fourier invariant is 0 but kappa is non-zero?
Yes. Yes, there are. Yes, sigma 2, 3, 11. Sigma 2, 3, 11 is not true. I think there are such examples. So let me say, so in terms of examples, kappa is equal to alpha for many sigma PQRs where these values are small, but it's not so for, I think the first example that a student of mine found was sigma 7.11.78. So I think, well, this is due to Matt Stoffergan. So he is computing this invariance for ciphered vibrations. I mean, for many small Briskon spheres, at least the K-theory and the cohomology of the space are very similar. And then with rational coefficients. And then alpha kind of captures the bottom tail, which stays, which there are three tails in Zima 2 coefficients, but alpha is the one that kind of stays in Q coefficients. All right, so, yes, question?
I do wonder, what happens if you say something about X's that have more than one homology tree sphere boundary component?
Sure, you can say something about that. Yes, let me say something about that, if you... well, depends if you want to say it in terms of cobordisms or in terms of things bounding the same. If you just... I see. You can define kappa for the disjoint union, and that is in terms of the smash of the two spectra. But it's not immediately related to how... I mean, it doesn't have good connected sum properties, so I don't know, but you can define such a kappa. Or if you want, you can think of it in terms of cobordisms, and then you get, instead of kappa of minus y, you're just thinking of kappa y0 and kappa y1 here. And then you get an inequality like this with minus kappa of y0 here and minus kappa of y1 here. But you get it slightly weaker. You get minus 1 instead of plus 1. You can make it plus 1 when one of the boundaries has a certain property in terms of its K-theory. So, I mean, yes, there are generalizations.
So, I mean, if I take a closed spin manifold and chop it up into some of these and a couple of caps, then do I just end up with Fruiter's inequality?
Yes, exactly. You get something stronger if... Let me say this, actually. Let me just write it down. So if I have... why not? Y0, Y1, and a spin cobordism like this, W, then kappa Y1 plus Q is greater or equal than... P plus 1 plus kappa y0. Yes, and if you chop it up into pieces, then you just... So this is a weaker in a... Q is greater or equal than... P minus 1. P minus 1. And... it's greater or equal than P plus 1 plus kappa y0 if y0 is what I called Fleur KG split. So this is some technical condition in terms of the Fleur K theory. So this is, So this doesn't, this is the one that you kind of want, and that would give you, that's what I apply here when one of the boundaries is S3, then S3 is Fleur split, and you get these stronger inequalities. And if you could have that all the things in the mid are Fleur K split, then you could actually put add these inequalities together and get the 11/8 conjecture by Bauer's idea. But I don't know how to guarantee that the things in the middle are Fleur K split. All All right, so what I plan to do next is mostly I'm going to talk about I'm pretty much going to give the, sketch the proof of Furuta's theorem, and then at the end I will define kappa, and I won't get to prove the theorem, but you will see from the proof of the closed case that it shouldn't be hard to generalize. Similar ideas work for manifolds with boundary. Okay, so let me do that. So Furuta, once again, we have a spin for manifold, and the intersection form is P minus E8 plus Q times 0, 1, 1, 0, and P is even by Rochlin's theorem, and P and Q are greater than 0. And then we want to show that Q is greater or equal than P plus 1. So the first observation is that it suffices to assume that Q is even. So P is already, we know that it's even. If we just show this inequality for Q even, well, if Q is not even, then just add 1 to Q. Add a copy of S2 times S2 to Q. This increases Q by 1. You get that Q plus 1 is greater or equal than P plus 1. But this is even and this is odd, so you actually get a stricter inequality, and therefore you must have Q greater than P plus 1. So because of parity reasons, we might as well assume that both of them are even. Okay, so I should mention that this is not original, the original proof of Furuta, but it's the one given by Jim Bryan in a later paper where he generalized it a bit. Okay, so, what we're going to do is a finite dimensional approximation for the Seiberg-Witten map on X. So the Seiberg-Witten map on X, I don't want to write it down, but it's something from one forms plus spinors plus positive spinors to self-dual two forms plus negative spinors, and you also fix the gauge and you end up with omega 0 mod R. So you have such a map. We do finite dimensional approximation. You can think of it as when you have a closed manifold, it's like having, you can chop off two bolts and get a map between S3 to S3. So yesterday I talked about how such maps induce maps between the corresponding Fleur spectra. If those are S3, then you just get maps between spheres. And you have some suspensions corresponding to the invariants of X. So what you end up with is a pin 2 equivariant map from R tilde M plus H L plus P over 2, 1 point compactified, to R tilde M plus Q plus H of L compactified. Let me remind you what these things are. So so R tilde and H are representations of pin 2. Pin 2 is the circle union the circle times J inside the unit quaternions. So this automatically act on quaternions, and that's H. And on R tilde, EI theta acts trivially, and J acts by A goes to minus A. So this is a one-dimensional representation of pin 2, and this is a four-dimensional representation of pin 2. And, well, this just comes from the way the way Pinto acts on forms and on spinners. So you get some finite dimensional approximation of this space, R tilde to the M of this space is H to that. And the dimensions, the difference in dimensions, so M and L can be anything. I don't know, I mean, they can be anything depending on how big your approximation is. But P and Q are related to, are this P and Q from here. So, Q is B2 plus. They're related to the index of the linearization. And on the form part, the index is B2 plus, which is Q. And on the spinorial part, P over 2 is minus the signature over 16. So, and that's the index of the Dirac operator. So this is the part that I don't want to get into, but basically starting from the Seiberg-Witten equations, you can approximate them by a Pinto equivariant map like that. Yes?
Can you say what L was again?
L is anything. So M and L are just some big numbers. The more you approximate, the more, the bigger your space is. And if you want, we can always, let's say, we can assume that everything is even for simplicity. Actually, this would be helpful. Okay, and the other thing we have to know about this map is that F, the fixed point set, so if you look at the S1 fixed point set, this just corresponds to reducibles, and then this is a map from just R tilde, well, S1 x trivially on the R tilde part to R tilde M plus Q plus, and, this is, this comes from the inclusion, so... this is the inclusion, or homotopic to the inclusion. This is by studying reducibles. Okay, so starting with this algebraic topology data, you can get constraints on the existence of such maps, and this would actually lead to the inequality we want. So this is the one we want. And the way Furuta did it, and then Brian slightly simplified it, is, both proofs are based on applying Pinto. Let me call, for simplicity, I'm going to write Pinto as G. So Pinto, G equivariant, K theory. So if I have a space X, such as this one, I can look at kg tilde of X, so the reduced equivariant K theory of X, and we don't have to know too much about it. It's a module over kg of a point. So this describes, g equivariant bundles over your space, and it's a module over that of a point, and this is just the representation ring, the complex representation ring of G. These are G vector bundles over a point, just complex representations of G. And in the case of Pinto, you can study what this ring is. It turns out to be generated by two representations, C tilde and H, modulo some relation, C tilde squared equals 1, and C tilde H is equal to H, where C tilde just corresponds to the C tilde representation, which is the complexification of my R tilde representation. And H is just the quaternionic representation. So these are kind of fundamental representations. I mean, this one is not complex, but you can complexify it, and this one is the other generator, and they satisfy these relations. Right. So another way to write this is as it's somewhat a bit helpful to write it in terms of two other generators, W and Z. Modulo the relations W squared equals ZW equals 2W, where W is 1 minus C tilde and Z is 2 minus H. These are not, so these relations become those relations. They are not random generators. This is the Euler class of C tilde, and this is the Euler class of H. So lambda inverse of V is the alternating sum times the class of the ith wedge power of V. So for every representation V, you get this element. This is called the Euler class. And it plays a role in the Bott isomorphism. So the way I like to think about it is that if I have a space X, this lives inside the suspension of X by V. This is just V plus smash X. And this induces a map from kg of sigma vx to kg tilde of x. This is just the inclusion, the pullback of the inclusion. But now this is also kg tilde of x by the equivariant Bott isomorphism. So when you suspend by a complex representation of G, the K theory, the equivariant K theory does not change. So if you compose these two together, you get the map from kg tilde of x to kg tilde of x, and this is exactly multiplication by this Euler class. So depending on your representation. All right, so I think that's all you need to know for about K theory. Now let's just use the information that we have this map. So, right. So what does this map do? It gives me a map on K theory the other way. K theory is a cohomology theory. It goes contravariantly. So I write kg tilde of. Okay. Now. Well. R tilde squared is C tilde. I mean, C tilde is two copies of R tilde, and that's why I wanted everything to be even so that I write this in terms of complex representations. So this thing here is going to be C tilde to the m plus q over 2 plus h to the l perp goes to kg tilde of C tilde to the m over 2 plus h to the l plus p over 2 plus. So this is a sphere. Okay. This is the map induced by F. And now I'm also gonna look at the add a restriction to the S1 fixed point sets where I know what happens. So on the fixed point sets, I have kg tilde of HL plus, of C tilde of M plus Q over 2 plus going to kg tilde of C tilde of M over 2 plus. Okay, so all I'm writing is what this map does on KG theory and its restriction to the fixed point sets, and now we know that we have a commutative diagram like that. Well, all of these things are representations, complex representation spheres. So you can think of them as suspensions of S0. So by the Bott isomorphisms, they are just kg tilde of S0. And kg tilde of S0 is just R of G. It's just kg of a point, so it's R of G. So all of these are copies of R of G. So we just get the map R of G goes to R of G by F star R of G, R of G. And furthermore, we can describe these maps. This is just this just comes from the inclusion of the fixed point set into this, and this is exactly the kind of map that I considered here, corresponding to a suspension, in this case by the quaternions. So here I'm suspending by L copies of the quaternions, so when I identify both the domain and the target with R of G, I end up with multiplication by L copies of the Euler class for the quaternions. So lambda inverse of H. So this is just Z to the L. Just multiplication by that. And on the other side, I get Z to the L plus P over 2. Whereas on the bottom, I know that this is an inclusion. So again, I have multiplication by something, but this is basically Q over 2 copies of the Euler class of C tilde. So this is multiplication by W to the Q over 2. And now we're basically done. So from this, what do we get? We can look at the image of 1 in here. We get that Z to the L plus P over 2 times F star of 1, which is some element in R of G, should give us Z to the L times W Q over 2. And, so these are our relations. W squared is Z times W is 2W. So whenever I multiply something by W, I get a factor of 2. So in this case, I get 2 to the L plus Q over 2 minus 1 times W. All right, so from this commutative diagram, I get this relation in this ring. And now you have to observe, well, it's just some analysis. I mean, it's not hard. If you have a power of Z, if you want to multiply it by something and get a multiple of W, the only way you can do that is if what you multiply by is already has a W in it, because the only relation involving Z is Z times W is 2W. So F star of 1 had better be something of the form A times W, so that you get this W over here. So from here, now I'm getting that this side is A times, and here whenever I multiply by either Z of W, I get a factor of 2, 2 L plus P over 2 times W. Great. So now, from here, whatever A is, the exponent of 2 in here is going to be less than the exponent here. So I get that Q over 2 minus 1 is greater or equal than P over 2, or Q is greater or equal than P plus 2. And this is true if I assume that Q is even. If Q is odd, I just get that Q is greater or equal than P plus 1, a slightly weaker inequality. All right, so this was the proof of Ruta's theorem for closed form manifolds. So now let's see how, let me sketch how one can adapt this to form manifolds with boundary. Any questions? Yes?
So is G equivariant K theory like the end all be all of equivariant cohomology theories? Like, is there any hope that one could try to get more information just by using something?
Absolutely, you can, in fact. So you can use KO theory, and then you can, you can get slightly better bounds. So instead of p plus 1, you can get p plus 2 or p plus 4, depending on the on p mod 4, something like that, KO theory. Of course, maybe the best thing is stable homotopy theory, is equivariance. That's the kind of thing that actually gives you everything, in a sense, but that's hard to study. It has to do with the homotopy groups of spheres. However, I mean, there are actual examples of maps. I mean, you will not be able to prove the 11-8 conjecture like this, because there are actually examples of maps between those representation spaces, equivariant maps that exist and would contradict the 11-8 conjecture. So you can get better than this, but not a lot better. Okay, maybe I should... what am I going to do? Okay, let me erase some of this. I want to keep this on the board. So now, if we have boundary, then again we do finite dimensional approximation for the Cyber-Guitton map on X, and what we get is we get a map between spectra. So we get a map from the sphere instead of a map from a representation sphere to another representation sphere. We would get to a suspension of really to SWF of Y. This, as I explained last time, it's something like sigma of minus A over eta over 2 H sigma minus V0 tau of I nu tau. So, yes, this is this kind of shifted space. It's a suspension spectrum. But the space that you should think about is the Conley index for some approximation of the equations on Y. This is what you do. So I like to call this SWF of Y dependent on G, on the metric. So in order to destroy the dependence on nu and tau, you desuspend formally by this, and you get this space. And then you have to desuspend further by this eta, by this combination of the eta invariants, so that you get something metric independent. All right. So what happens is that instead of you're going to replace this in this diagram by C tilde of M plus Q over 2 plus HL plus smash SWF of Y. So, right. And so what you get instead of the previous diagram, you get something in terms of the K theory. So maybe I can call it the Pinto equivariant K theory of Y. So this is the KG equivariant theory of Y. And then you have maps to R of G, R of G, and R of G. The rest are still spheres. Remember that the fixed point set of this space, so if I look at SWF, the fixed point set of I nu tau, the S1 fixed point set, is exactly V0 tau. So let me be a little bit sloppy. I'm going to write that the fixed point set of SWFYG is S0. So that's not quite okay, because taking fixed point sets in equivariant homotopy is a big deal. I mean, there are two different ways of doing it. But let's just say for simplicity that this is a space. Then then it's S1 equivariant, then it's S1 fixed point set is S0. And you still have this suspension by this. So whatever it is, you're going to get the diagram like this. And you want to analyze is the same way and get some inequality following this method of proof. So let me not go through all the details, but observe that we don't know what F star is, but we know what these two maps are the same as before, and here we don't quite know what it is. We still have a Z2DL, but then we have something else that corresponds to whatever K theory we have here. So we have to study this inclusion map. So let's use the similar diagram. But now let's look at the map from kg tilde, let's say, of SWFYG to its fixed point set. So it's, again, assuming that this is a space, we go to kg tilde of L0. And this is R of G. So what happens is that the image is some ideal in here. And for the diagram to work, you need to study what this ideal is. And it's easier to just get some information from the ideal by taking a homomorphism from R of G to Z. And there is a simple homomorphism. It has to do with powers of 2, exponents of 2, since this is what we used here. Namely, we're going to take W to 2 and Z to 2. So this is, these relations are satisfied if we set W and Z equals to 2, so we get a homomorphism to Z. It's a ring homomorphism. And let the image is an ideal. Ideals in Z are just all principles, so it's a multiple of Z. So let's call this multiple KYG of Z. Well, KYG is a positive integer. So this corresponds to how many multiples of 0, multiples of 2 you get. So for example, for S3, K of S3 and the round metric is 0. This was just SWF is S0, and this is just 1 goes to 1. So, let me call this S times Z. So in this case, S would be 0, but what I, S would be 1, but what I care about is the exponent of 2. So let me write S as 2 to the power kappa K of YG times something odd. So this is how I want to define K of YG. And for example, K of S3 and the round metric is the exponent of 2 in 1, which is 0. Okay, so basically, this tells me what happens with this space. Now, this still depends on the metric, and we have to shift by eta over 2. So, what happens if you have a metric such that this, let's say, increases by 1? You get an extra factor of h, which corresponds to multiplying this by an extra z. So the exponent of 2 that you get in the ideal increases by 1. So every time you add an h, you increase by 1. So to get something invariant, you have to look at k at kappa or kyg plus eta over 4. Right. And the way I define the invariant is kappa of y is twice kappa of yg plus eta over 2. So this turns out to be an invariant of y, because shifting by, again, because changing things by a suspension just corresponds to adding a factor of 2 to your ideal. And right, and from here I get that Q. So by doing the same diagram, I end up with the relation that Q is greater or equal than P plus 1 minus kappa of y by going through the same process. And let me also notice that since it's defined like this, this is automatically congruent to eta over 2 mod 2, and eta over 2 was mu, the Rochlin invariant mod 2. And furthermore, if you're interested in homological bordism, you can do the same thing as before, but instead of looking at spin manifolds, you just look at homological bordisms. And by studying this map on equivariant K-theory, kind of similar to what we did for alpha, beta, gamma, you can show that kappa is an invariant of homological bordism. So I think that's all I had to say.
Rather than the numerical
invariants. Sure, I don't know. I mean, I think we have to develop the theory more, to develop exact triangles and things like that to compute it. Right. I mean, these things are kind of hard to compute. Like, if you look at the homological invariants, then, you know, you just have to study the reducible and how many irreducibles interact with it. But if you want to understand the interaction between irreducibles, there can be many irreducibles, and they can be related by attaching maps, and you don't know what they are in the stable homotopy groups of spheres. But anyway, so anyway, maybe, but I don't know. We're not there yet.
Other questions?
Well, sort of in similar vein, I guess. I mean, I suppose one of the things that one hopes for from, you know, homotopical refinements of cohomology theories is, you know, is interesting cohomology operations and Steenrod operations on cohomology.
That's a good idea.
There's that, but I mean, I also wondered about the Adams operations on Cyberwood and K theory.
Yes, so... Furuta's original proof was based on that.
Oh.
Yes, so this is the simplified proof. I mean, yes, but the way he thought about it was using the Adams operations. I think you get the same thing by using those here, but maybe,
right,
you know...
They might be interesting as invariants.
Yes, that's possible.
Any other questions? Let's thank Chip in for a great lecture series.